And welcome back to In Focus News Radio, KMAN. Next segment here, going to talk with Greg Eystone. He's a horticulture agent with K-State Research and Extension here in Riley County. And Greg joins us via telephone. Good morning, Greg.
Hey, good morning. Wish it was a little bit brighter, sunny spring day for us, but there's still plenty to talk about.
That's right. It's one of those weird times of year weather-wise where you can have, the beautiful days, and then mixed in there, you'll have a random day where winter's still here.
Yeah, I would say it's really not unusual to have these situations here in the springtime and for us, and gardening still can continue, and we just work around these things.
That's right. And, of course, gardening, more people may be wanting to do some gardening here with the limited activities that people can do. Getting outside is something you can certainly do, get out in your yard and plant a garden. What's good to plant here this time of year here in the month of April?
Yeah, so we're still just getting started. Some people may already have a couple crops in the ground, but there are plenty of opportunities still. And in our environment or situation here in Riley County, many of us may not have property per se, and all these plants, these spring crops, work really well in containers as well. So even if you don't have land, there is still plenty of opportunity to do some home gardening, whether it be on a patio or a balcony or what have you. As far as what's being planted at this time, we've already done some planting of lettuce and potatoes and radishes, spinach, but now maybe coming around to having a second crop because many of these will mature and you cut them off and they're still growing conditions. And so lettuce would be something that if you haven't planted, you can, or if you already planted, you plant in a second a crop for that. So there's lots of all the spring crops, really, peas, onions, turnips, cauliflower, broccoli, all those things can go in the ground. If you have or purchasing what we call transplants, so most of our broccoli, cauliflower, kale may be coming as a plant already growing, and you're going to stick that into the soil or in your container. Oftentimes, we have plenty of nutrients in those growing medias, but because the soil temperatures are cooler, they may not be as readily available. So we use what's called a starter fertilizer solution. You can purchase those, or you can make your own, just something, a fertilizer with a little bit higher phosphorus. That's that second number on a fertilizer container. It doesn't take a whole lot, but something with a little bit more phosphorus. If it's a granular product, you can just put that in a bucket of water and let it stand overnight and let it dissolve, and then use about a cup of that solution around your transplant when you're planting. Again, that's just because it's readily available for that young plant to get going, but typically our soils have phosphorus in them and we don't need to be adding a pollutant or something that's not necessary. We did. Brandon and I were talking a little bit earlier. I did want to mention that our soil testing lab is still currently open on campus. You physically can't drop it off at their door, but they do have a drop box that they've always had for after hours kind of dropping. And so if you haven't done a soil test and are still needing that for this spring, that process can still take place. They have to have a form, a little answer sheet for that, and we have that up on our website. So if you go to riley.ksu.edu and the lawn and garden section and then click on the soil test, and that will have a form right at the top that you would fill out to take with your sample to put in that drop box. And also the form talks about a billing system, so just check on there that you want to get billed. And the drop box there on campus, Throckmorton Hall, it's on the Denison side. So Claflin Denison, there's a small parking lot behind the building, loading dock you see as you pull in there. And the drop box for that soil samples are just to the north of that. There's a little sidewalk on the north side of the building. So basically north and west side of Throckmorton. And if you can't find it, give me a call at the 75-410-5336, and I will try and walk you through that.
All right. And when they get their results, will they just get it like in an email or something like that?
Great. Yes, it does come. Soil Lab will process the soil, send me the results, and then I forward that on so I can take a look at it just to see if there's any unique situations there. Typically, it takes maybe 7 days for your sample to get processed. A little bit of a your results are going to be as good as the sample that you take. So for our lawns and landscapes and gardens, we like to go down about 6 inches. Don't really need that very top surface because there's always more nutrients at the top. And that's why a good sample is going to give you more accurate results. So 5 to 6 inches deep, take as many random samples through the area you're trying to do. For an example, the lawn, if you take 15, 20 sub-samples kind of randomly throughout the area, mix that together, blend it together. The soil lab needs 2 cups. I typically say a sandwich bag full, and so you're going to have leftover soil that you put back in your lawn or landscape, but bring that sample, take that up there, and that'll give you fairly good, accurate results. The other situation is you kind of want an even column from top to bottom. So we have soil probes that generally we can loan out that gives you a nice even sample from top to bottom. Since we don't have that situation, you're just going to have to try and do a good job as far as getting the same amount of soil from the top to the bottom of that 5 to 6 inch core, if you will, so it's not a little bit changed because you have more topsoil than subsoil, so to speak.
Okay. We're talking with Greg Eystone, Riley County K-State Extension horticulture agent. And we do have an email here from a listener who had a question about his garden.
Great.
He says, what medical or vegetable garden plants or techniques would have made it through last night's hard freeze?
Good question. So our cool season vegetables, this very common situation, growing conditions for them. So I think, 27 was maybe our low. Most of them should be able to withstand that. So there's time will tell, but with some moisture, that's always helpful to have moist soil going into a cold situation. You can always cover your plants if you're a little bit questionable whether that's going to work, get through the cold spell. The covering is really trapping the soil heat around your plants, and so you want to secure the edges so that you're kind of making a greenhouse effect, if you will, and that soil heat will radiate back up around the plants and prevent maybe some cold injury. Our vegetables, I don't think there's really a problem. Our problem comes with our fruit crops. Those, if they're in bloom, are very susceptible to cold temperatures. And so in my case, my peach tree has been blooming, probably going to have reduced amount of fruit, which is very common for our environment. So unfortunately, again, that probably won't have a very large, if any, fruit crop on peaches. That's why we always encourage apples, pears. They bloom later in the season and more reliable as far as making it through these really common cold temperatures during the springtime.
Okay. Well, I've heard a lot of folks getting out the last couple weeks, especially to their lawns, and that now is a not today, but you know, this weekend and certainly next week, there can be much more done here with landscaping and taking care of those lawn weeds.
Yes, I've had quite a few calls on lawn weeds, which is pretty common this time of the year. We have some common, what we call winter annuals. So they start actually in the fall, don't really see them, they don't see that, aren't very big, and that's why we typically suggest, you know, a broadleaf weed management in the fall because they're small, easier to kill. As they're getting into this time of the season, they're much harder, they're more vigorous, they're blooming, not taking a lot of products into the root system. So henbit, chickweed, those are our more common winter annuals. In my situation, I have lots of speedwell. It has little blue flowers on it. These are all, once we start to get into the hot part of the season, have done their thing. They've set lots of seeds for next year, but they will kind of dissolve into the landscape and wait it out for next fall. You can, if it makes you feel good, try some broadleaf herbicides on there, but again, they're probably going to produce their seed for next year, and you'll probably have to kind of be in a cycle, continuing the cycle. So if you're trying to reduce that, our management really is in the fall, putting on side broadleaf herbicide at that time and manage that. The common situation of some of more of our perennials, these are cool season perennials that really show up at this time of the year, are wild onion, wild garlic, kind of look like a grass, but if you pull them up, you do see a bulb down there. Doesn't really matter which one you have. Management would be the same. A Triomec, something with some dicamba in it, if it's bothering you, would be an application that you'd put on. Those leaves don't absorb the product very well, so what we use is a spreader sticker to mix in with your broadleaf herbicide. And it may take, those are pretty good hardy plants, so it may take a couple applications to really knock those down. Those are pretty easy to do in a grassy area, so the broadleaf herbicides have no effect on your lawn, so they work very well that way. Get a lot of these weeds maybe in your landscape around desirable plants. In my situation, I have them growing in my iris, which is virtually hard to separate. But there are some different application equipment that you could try. Some use most commonly is like a sponge paintbrush that you dip into your herbicide solution, and then you can actually kind of wipe it just on the leaf tissue of your weeds. Probably the more practical one. Some people can use a cloth glove. Put on a plastic glove first on your hand so the herbicide's not getting on your skin. Then you dip your cloth glove into the solution and can just grab it and wipe it on and kind of avoid hitting your desirable plants. Some situations you can just cover your desirable plants with a bucket or something like that so there's a barrier so when you're spraying the product, it's not hitting your desirable plants. So it's more of an application process, maybe more than herbicide selection. We have one other weed that looks kind of like the wild garlic, wild onion, and that's called Star of Bethlehem. Again, kind of a grassy looking leaf tissue to it, very shiny. The mid vein is a more gray color, so you can identify it fairly easy. Takes maybe a little different product to control that as far as good results. Something with a carfenazone active ingredient in that has been more effective than, say, just the regular broadleaf herbicide. There are different products out there. For example, one is the Weed Free Zone product out there that you can get and would work fairly well. Again, probably take a couple applications to control the Star of Bethlehem. It looks like the others right now, but once it starts to bloom, it has kind of a pretty white flower, and it can be ornamental, but can spread into areas where you don't want it. Again, probably going to take a couple applications to eradicate that. Any of these perennial weeds are really have stored food resources in them and are a little bit more challenging to control.
All right, and then I'll just wrap up here with kind of lawn mowing here. What is what's the recommendation on that? How high should you cut your grass at this point?
Great question. Here in the spring, actively growing, maybe growing faster than we want to at times, we can mow that no shorter than 2 inches. Many of us have tall fescue grass. Some may have a little bluegrass with that. But 2 inches is as short as you want to go, and you can mow it higher. I try to mow mine as high as possible. That way it actually takes a little longer to grow, and so you don't have to mow quite as frequently. Makes good canopy, keeps the weeds down. Getting close to pre-emergent time when people put down products to keep the crabgrass foxtail from growing this summer. And if we can mow as tall as possible, there's less opportunity for those weeds to get a hold. And so mow as high as you can, so you can even 3.5 inches is kind of where mine is. So that means I can let it get 5.25 inches before I mow it. It takes a little while to get there, so that doesn't mean I'm mowing quite as frequently. But it's a little bit personal preference. Some people like a little shorter look to it, and we can. So the main thing is that you have enough leaf tissue there that's building good, strong, healthy plants, and you're not removing a lot of leaf tissue at one time, which kind of stresses the plant and makes it weaker. So, and use a sharp blade. Make sure you sharpen your blade for the season, and as a general rule of thumb, about every 10 mowings, you should sharpen that blade. It's going to use less gasoline, be easier on the engine, and also should make a nice-looking lawn when you're done.
All right, Greg. Well, we always appreciate bringing you on the program, and one thing folks can do is definitely do their lawn work and work in their gardens, and we always appreciate it.
Yeah, it is the season. It's a good therapy, and we are still open and available, so give us a call at 537-6350. You can give me a call on my cell phone. Eventually, it'll get to me anyway, and that's 785-410-5336.
Okay. Appreciate it, Greg. We'll talk to you again sometime down the road.
Sounds great, Brandon. Have a good weekend.
All right, you too. That is Greg Eystone, and we will continue in focus after this on K-Man.